Hey everyone, welcome to yet another episode of Building It Up with Bertelsmann India's first podcast that focuses on the growth pangs of a startup. I'm your host Ankur Variku, and for today's episode, there is a topic that I'm particularly and personally very passionate about. How do you build an organization where people love to come to work? Beyond the money, beyond the title, beyond perhaps even the work, how does one organization find purpose within its employees? And with me today is Prasenjit, the co-founder and CEO of Great Place to Work in India. So in this episode, we will navigate through what does it take to create a great place to work? How do you go about defining culture? What's the role that the leader plays in defining it? And a lot more. Thank you so much, Prasenjit, for coming and joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
So my first question to you is, do you think fundamentally the definition of a great place to work differs from a traditional company to, say, a technology startup?
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. So the common myth about a great place to work is a place where people are engaged, they're happy, and
Free lunch, foosball tables.
Well, massage chairs and multi-cuisine restaurants exactly. And all of that. Now, interestingly, many of those things are there at great workplaces and many great workplaces, but that's not what defines a great place to work. The simple definition is a high trust culture that leads to sustained business results. Hmm. So if you have one but you don't have the other, then it's not a great place to work. And I think that's where that definition, in my opinion, does not change. Doesn't matter what kind of business that you are into. Yeah. And I think the mistake that a lot of people make sometimes, and particularly if you are an entrepreneur in the early stage and you are very romantic about creating a business which will attract the best kind of talent, is that you blow a lot of cash unnecessarily in trying to meet that hype and those expectations of what a great place in Silicon Valley, for example, would mm-hmm. look like. And my advice to, at least in the early stage, would be, if you do nothing else to create a great place to work, get your business model right, because it's actually not going to be exactly the model that you start with, that you are going to end with if you are successful and you survive.
Yeah.
And so therefore, my sort of suggestion would be to a startup is that you must have a higher purpose. There is obviously a need that you are trying to meet. Mm-hmm. Probably not get into too much of strategy and defining business boundaries in the initial stage. Experiment a little bit. But in the beginning itself, you have to be also clear about what kind of DNA you want to create in an organization. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to distinguish between DNA of the organization and the core values of the organization, mm-hmm. which hopefully is a stage you reach by the time you are, you know, between 10 to 100, the way you put it.
Sure. And where does this DNA or this value, because there are different things, come from? Do you think it's a collective DNA of the organization, or do you tend to feel that it's largely founder-driven?
You know, that's interesting. To my mind, whether it's DNA or values, mm-hmm. they're both influenced by the founder, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. The slight difference that I would say, and this is my interpretation, basis what we have done and what I have seen in many other startups, mm-hmm. you know, the DNA is inherently that makes you successful. For example, imagine that You are amongst the pride of lions or tigers or whatever it is in savannah, and you are hungry. So mm-hmm. you are looking out for a prey, and then you see a herd, and at that point in time the chase is on, and this sort of animal or beast of prey who is chasing, let us say, his potential prey, mm-hmm. instinctively has the DNA to be successful, because he is hardwired or softwired for that. He is not asking questions like, am I going to be successful? Or what happens if I don't get it? I didn't eat a whole of yesterday. Yeah. He doesn't have self-doubts. So the DNA that makes you successful is not necessarily the same in every business. For example, mm-hmm. when we started Great Place to Work, we realized that fundamentally, three things are very important for us to be successful or for our people to be successful. The first one is being a startup mm-hmm. with no big daddy who is putting in lots of money enterprise or initiative was important. We realized that Great Place to Work deals with tons of data. So the ability to understand those trends, so expertise mm-hmm. became important. So enterprise and expertise. And last but not the least, we realized that we need people who can take accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, anybody who can display enterprise expertise or accountability, and fundamental is accountability, has the DNA to be successful at a great place to work. And much later, when we had a core team, that's when we got them together to define our core values.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way we look at it, the DNA helps you to be successful. The core values make sure that you are successful within the boundaries that you have set for yourself and your business.
Got it. In your particular journey, because you're also an entrepreneur and you've also spent so much time with startups, do you see that the requirements or the definition of what comprises a great place to work changes over time?
Yeah. So I think there are two, three things which happen in a startup over a period of time. The first requirement is that we want to change the world in some way.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in a limited way, or it could be a very audacious kind of goal. And at that point in time, you can actually get together a team of people who are not really complaining about work-life balance or even market salary and so on and so forth. The second transition happens when you actually get investors to put in money.
Yeah.
And then that's the time when actually the startup is in a big danger, because that's the time some fight starts happening, particularly if you have more than one partner,
mm-hmm.
Because you have tasted some success, somebody is putting in money, and at that point in time, there will be a set of people who now say that, what about my career growth?
Mm-hmm.
And, do we have some ways of having a structured compensation policy, and,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth?
Yeah.
And that's an interesting phase, because you may or may not have everyone invested in the long-term success of the startup. Some of them are quote-unquote employees,
yeah,
and who would have their own needs.
Yeah.
And I think once you are, let us say, 100-odd employees or more, then the founder's ability to build or to retain that kind of relationship becomes difficult, right?
Correct.
And that is where the leadership depth becomes very, very critical for the startup.
Yeah, yeah. There's enough content, Prasanjeet, and of course, you publish a lot from your organization as well, which inarguably says that a great place to work will deliver substantially higher results than an average company. Now, that's hindsight. And one can always take that as a premise for saying, I ought to build a great place to work. But what could be good feedback loops on a real-time basis that could tell the founder, we're on the right track, we're on the right path?
I would say three, four things will come to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, can you spot people who you think are smarter than you are in your business, or are you the smartest guy in your business?
Okay.
So if you are the smartest guy in the business, then you are probably, you don't have much hope, right? I can imagine initially.
Yeah.
The second is, can you spot a critical mass of people, and that need not necessarily be limited to your immediate reports, but across the organization, who you think are there for the long term and the long term vision of the organization,
mm-hmm.
who you can count on at any point in time. The third thing that I would say is, it could be as simple as, what are the things that people are doing spontaneously within the organization, and whether it is a office excursion or the annual conference or a client event,
They don't need to be told what needs to be done.
Are you the guy who is poring over a checklist and double-checking what everyone is doing?
Yeah.
Or are you slightly clueless about what is happening? If you're slightly clueless about what is happening and it's happening nevertheless...
That's a good sign.
That's a good sign.
Got it. There's this famous quote that culture eats strategy for breakfast. How far do you agree with that?
Imagine you are the CEO and you are having a very important meeting with your team,
mm-hmm.
and you get a phone call, maybe mm-hmm. from a customer. It's a very important call. So the meeting is important, but you have to go out for some time, and you stand up and you say, "Hey guys, please continue this meeting. This is very important, but I have to rush out," and continue. Now, suppose you have a hidden camera. So being a great place to work, you don't have a hidden camera, but suppose you have a hidden camera in that room. What happens in that room when the CEO goes out of the door? Somebody takes over, right? Now, maybe the senior most guy takes over. Maybe the taskmaster takes over. Maybe the joker takes over. You know, suddenly you have people cracking jokes. We like to believe the culture takes over.
Hmm.
So if you want to spot the culture, watch what's happening when the CEO is not there. And unlike the culture, we in fact call, many of my colleagues would call the culture the deputy CEO, because the CEO can only be present in one place, but your culture is there in all the offices that you are in. And the transition from a good place to a great place, in a great place to work, the culture becomes the CEO.
Nice. The hardest times of a startup is, and it's invariably going to happen, is when things go completely unexpected, maybe even out of your control. You're running out of money, you've lost business, maybe you've lost a top leader, employees are uncertain, and so on and so forth. And I've personally felt this, Prasanjit, that those are moments when you perhaps begin to question the core of the organization. Question whether it actually will survive, whether it's meant to be, whether it's even making sense anymore or not. Any view on, or any examples that you can share where you know that if there was anything that possibly brought that company out of turmoil, it was their core DNA and their value system, or the culture, if you were wholly defining it.
I remember at an early stage for Mindtree, and you remember mm-hmm. these were, I think, 10 guys who came and started this company.
Yeah.
And I think they went through a downturn like everybody else, except that it had significant implications for the business.
Mm-hmm.
They called a town hall.
Okay.
And they said, "This is what is happening to the business. And this is, you know, the kind of margins, etc., that we have. And these are the options, and we may need to let go of people." And it was fascinating because a lot of people, and that happened to another company in Bangalore called Saskin. Again, mm-hmm. Saskin, those days were very hot, if you remember.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who is this? Rajiv Modi had come back from US and started this company, and it was a very exciting place. Employees got together. They said, "We are going to take a voluntary pay cut."
Nice.
And the leadership set an example
hmm.
by doing more than what other employees did.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, the good news is they survived. Yeah. And but years later, when employees speak about the company, and mm-hmm. we have data of so many of those companies, they always say with pride that when the going was tough,
mm-hmm.
we did not take the most expedient decisions. We mm-hmm. got people involved
mm-hmm.
and we tried to do what is in the best interest of people.
Yeah.
Which is very different from the knee-jerk reactions that I see in many, many startups. I think, you have to accept one thing, that your success
mm-hmm.
has more to do with luck than anything else that you can give credit to. It's not your business model.
I like what you're saying. I like it.
You know,
yeah.
It's just everything else worked out, but you just happen to be damn lucky.
Yes, yes, yes. What if a founder found out over time that the DNA or the culture that they've built somehow, I don't know how though, is not working for them, and it's also not the kind of culture that he or she would have liked to build? How do you go about revisiting a company's culture? Can you even do it at all? Is there a way that you change a company's culture because it's not working?
In many ways, the culture is a reflection of the founder in cases where the founder is still very active in the business. There's a difference between how the what the founder believes and sincerely believes, what he thinks he is, and how he or she comes across to other people. And I think this gap between intent and actions is what creates the gap between the desired culture and what is the reality. People, you judge yourself by your intentions. Others judge you by your actions.
Yeah.
So when I say that I have created a zero politics kind of organization, but as a founder, I make loose comments about people behind their back or in front of others.
Yeah.
Unless we have those kind of transparent bottom-up mechanisms where somebody even anonymously is going to raise that issue. And, you know, if you don't have that, as a founder, sadly, you are the one who is destroying the culture, but there's nobody to tell you, you know, how you are doing it.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. What are those two or three, four or five things that you would encourage them to think of from an either employee perspective or organization perspective to build a great place to work?
I'll distinguish between an early stage sort of startup and then one which is fairly established, but it is now facing the challenges of scaling up.
Perfect. Right? Great.
Now, at the early stage, we have already discussed, you have to get the business model right.
Yeah.
That's number one. I think a very important thing which is good news, it comes easily to younger people and younger entrepreneurs, is the mindset that if you have to compete in the market for customers, you can't do that without competing in the market for talent.
Yeah.
Effectively, what it means is a mindset that is, I sort of express it as employee is equal to customer. And the third thing I think which is very important and at the startup phase is a mindset that you are willing to share wealth. People are willing to put in extra effort if they know that the risks and the rewards are to some extent equitably being, you know, is being equitably shared.
One question that is always on my mind. Usually when startups are beginning to grow, they would feel the need to bring in, as you also admitted, the best talent from outside. But they also worry that this best talent will come with its own set of cultural nuances, its own value system, its own baggage. Is that something one should worry about or watch out for? Or, as you pointed out, the best companies are more focused on making people performers than on focusing on removing or weeding out the non-performers, which don't fit in.
You know, there is a statistical sort of advantage if you are growing organically as opposed to inorganic growth, which obviously means many more people who are coming. When you grow organically, it's actually easier for you to assimilate people into the culture that you have.
Yeah.
And there are different models. For example, for many, many years, I remember Lemon Tree, which is a great example of starting a company with a unique culture. They had what was called as a mothership.
Okay.
That means that, you know, the the two hotels that they had in Gurgaon, that's where you learn the culture. That's where you learn the process. That's where you master the business model. And if you open a new hotel, then you have already done a stint in this mothership. So you actually send people from the mothership, and by and large, you get 80% of the culture and the business model right. Unfortunately, that model is not hugely scalable. It works up to a particular point.
Yeah.
But that's where practices become very important.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I think that's a wonderful thought to close this conversation. Thank you so much, Prasenjit. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for inviting me.
Great. Well, thank you again.
And with this, we come to the end of yet another absolutely amazing episode of Building It Up with Bertelsmann. Prasenjit's conversations were truly meaningful. There's a lot that I took away as a founder, and I hope you as founders as well now recognize the need for having the right culture right from day one and not wait for you to become big at some point of time. And more importantly, what does it take to define that culture from day one itself? Until the next episode, this is Ankur Variku, your host, signing off. You have a great week ahead.